September 2007, this year in Cameroon, Yaoundé, the ministers of health of all African countries, there were a total of 27 of them, came together, and it was agreed that just like the global fund, the fund was going to be put together, and that fund was going to be focused on maternal mortality issues and safe motherhood issues and the issue of infant mortality. How to reduce that, and if that is being done, that hopefully that would help us reach the MDG goal of 2015, because the current data has shown that Africa would not be able to reach the MDG goal by the year 2057, which is 40 years after the MDG 2015 goal. So that fund is in the pilot or in the infancy stage. There's still, you know, it hasn't been finalized, but the issue has been raised and it's been agreed on, and the African ministers from the different African countries are going to come together and see how we can get that fund. And in addition to funds from different governments, the US government, the British government, private donors, the Gates, and other people that are interested in funding this issue, that would be the fund that will focus on preventing maternal death and infant death in Africa. I think I'm going to stop here at this point. And if there's any question, specific question that people have concerning what the government is doing or what the government needs to do, we'll definitely table that to the African Union and get their feedback. But I'm really trying to guard myself from not talking about the technical intervention, since Nazo has handled that so well, and Shahul, and that's not my mandate for today. Thank you.
All right, so are there any questions?
I think that the solutions are really country specific in terms of strategies and what's being employed. But I wanted to be clear on the question specifically. I mean, what specific you're talking about? There are several types of issues. One is quality needs to be improved where you do have skill care, and the demand needs to be increased for that type of care. And I tried to, you know, put forward examples of those types of processes, one where quality improvement of existing services is in place and where you can generate demand and actually increased use of skilled care through community level work, etc. And then there are multiple other strategies in terms of task shifting. One where for Mozambique stands out, and it's not a USAID specific example, but where you are training, I mean, non-physician clinicians is not the right term, but there is a task shifting approach, and we have an evidence gap we need to build up significantly in that area. There's a whole other realm where no midwives or skilled care is available. What do you do? And misoprostol is one intervention where getting that out is extremely important, and it's being introduced in countries, and the policy environment for introduction is being worked on. So there are a variety of different types of typologies that may even exist within a country context, much less, you know, trying to say that at the country level. But there are African countries have developed roadmaps towards success and have highlighted a variety of interventions and strategies that are needed. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I think this whole area of just skilled skilled care is very important, skilled attendance is very important, but simply increasing access to skilled birth attendance, we have seen even from the Asian context, does not result in reductions in mortality. So a variety of strategies are needed. In some cases, for example, I'm thinking of the MATLAB, Bangladesh maternal mortality reduction study that we were looking at. And basically, women are bypassing the community level midwives and going straight to referral facilities to access care. So, you know, these are the kinds of learnings that are coming out of smaller scale investigations and country level work. And then there are broader determinants that are extremely important too, such as in some cases, infrastructure. In other, I mean, poverty plays a huge role. There are a variety of barriers that are important. Or at least sort of build in accountability within a decentralized context where a body such as I'm thinking of, let's say, district ward health committees in Bangladesh, where you have community representatives as a part of committees and that those committees are functional to oversee progress. But I think another area, Ron, which I wasn't able to include in the presentation, which I think is somewhat promising. I mean, the sustainability is another realm altogether, but there is some very exciting work in paying for performance, basically, where you are trying bring about or generate a certain sense of accountability and performance and build it into the system. And how that becomes institutionalized and longer term is sort of another area altogether. But pay for performance, linking, at least for the larger level strategic work, incorporating some sort of standards and linking that to even donor assistance, I think is going to be important in sort of moving forward and ensuring that you're moving forward and ensuring accountability is a part of the process and that in cases donor assistance and funding is tied to that. So I think that, you know, in all the work that I've seen to date in terms of why things work, successful districts, successful states, it's that local champion that is absolutely critical to success. And how do you build local leadership and continue to work on that and work make that a part of system strengthening efforts is something that we need to grapple with as we move forward. But that local leadership and local champions are extremely important, and there is little substitute for that, really. But good question. I don't have any good answers.
I'm just going to answer based on our experience in Africa. One of the things that we've actually seen that helps for sustainability, because like what you're saying, you know, most times you start a program. I'm sorry, I hope there's no World Bank person here, but the World Bank starts a program and 5 years after they've gone, you know, it's almost like an edifice. And it's really an issue. One of the things, I'm not saying that's the only answer, is really getting government buy-in from the onset of the program, because what you see lots of organizations do is, you know, we go into those countries, you start working with a local community, and you sometimes almost start running a parallel system. And then when it's like mid-evaluation time or getting to the final time of your project, you're now looking for the government's buy-in, and sometimes they always feel slighted. They feel like, you've gone on without us, so why do you need us now? So I think there's really a need for organizations to start off with the government, get the government's buy-in, and like Nazo said, then get a local leader, you know, look for a local champion that will take it on, and also look at the culture of the country. You talk what happens with women, they, you know, you get them into the facilities and when you leave they stop coming. What's the culture there? Do women have that independence? You need to start working with the men. How do you get male involvement into your program, since that's the culture there? I think, you know, sometimes we miss that, and we all need to start thinking of how we integrate this from the onset into our program so we ensure sustainability.
And if you, on the statistics, if you look at, you know, when there was a report in Lancet about this measurement issues and starting a new initiative, I don't know, I International, do you know the name of it?
International Health Partnership,
IHM. Yeah, I think one of those, you know, and their target is to address this, you know, number issues. The statistics we have now, it's all, it's quite confusing. There is not... It's not the same way they measure, you know, maternal mortality in each country. And so the numbers, you look at UNDP, you will see a different number. You look at USAID, World Bank, all of them. But more or less, the ranking is somewhat similar. It is not exactly. And that is a critical issue, and they are working on that. And probably in maybe next 10 years, we will have better data. That's all I have to say on that. And Nazo?
I can share some information with you from WHO, particularly Lale Saye and others, in terms of the comprehensiveness of information from countries and which countries have fed into the new estimate, because I think you're referring to the Ken Hill paper, right? Yes. And so there is it's not the International Health Partnership, the Gates Institute. The Lancet article plus the Gates has set up an institute for evaluation, which is also involved. I don't think it's part of the steering group, but they're also looking at global estimates. But I don't know right offhand or the details of what caused the differentials, but I think that in terms of what's contributed to the statistic that was put out in the Lancet, there was a much more comprehensive body of data. But saying that, there's still tremendous gaps in information. And I will share that information with you where you can see which countries and what types of information systems are feeding in and assumptions. So I think that all around it's sort of cautionary notes around overall estimates, but at least there was an effort to really look at a more comprehensive body or a data set that was contributing to the newer statistic. And yes, then there are other groups involved who are going to probably look at that. One of the other things also is that WHO continues to, the Making Pregnancy Safer group, as they continue to work on overall estimates and improving our capacity to be able to talk about sort of global as well as regional estimates. And a more...
Another question was about Latin America.
Yes. I'm looking at the countries that are put forward for the MCH initiative in this report, and the LAC countries are basically Bolivia, Guatemala, and Haiti.
Right, and my question was, Guatemala certainly hasn't been on that list.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to know...
Well, this particular list was for at least for the MCH focal countries, initial list of focal priority countries that were going to benefit from the increased MCH funds. There were several factors that contributed to this initial set of countries. Disease burden was one, but capacity to synergize with other USAID efforts in country. So there were multiple factors, and one could argue that perhaps countries are not included in this initial set of 30 countries that should be here. Certainly the countdown effort has 68 countries that it's tracking. We feel that, you know, we needed to start off by focusing our efforts, and this is the initial list of 30 countries. And in several of these countries, there is overlap and synergy with other strategic initiatives, but it was a process in which various groups within USAID participated, and multiple factors were assessed, including disease burden, including potential to synergize with other USG resources, including, you know, multiple other criteria, which I don't remember off the top of my head. But this particular list was generated specifically for the purposes of a focused effort and accelerated reductions, where countries where it would be possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One more thing, you know, USAID is a U.S. government entity, and when we make decisions, there are issues or aspects beyond disease burden and bilateral relations. For example, Mauritania is now going through a coup or destabilize, and we may not be using that country for our targets, although the burden is very high. For example, Somaliland, for example, is a very safe place, but then the moment we step into Somaliland, it can be misinterpreted as that, are we recognizing Somaliland as an entity? So there are a lot of political implications when U.S. government takes or decides on a country A or B. It may not be always based on disease burden alone. You were talking about all the African Union. Of course, you know, African Union is, you know, the United States of Africa, for example, kind of trying to consolidate its activities, and they do work with all these entities. What Kechi was trying to tell you, that they have began taking responsibility and showing their part of their commitment. You know, otherwise, so far it has been, to a large extent, an external interest and external driven activity. Now the African governments and African, at the macro level, they are beginning to show leadership and ownership. And it's a good sign. For example, African Union is a heads of state organization. When the heads of state meet twice a year, and when they make a commitment, whether they do it really altruistically or not, at least they have an obligation to come back after 6 months, say what we have done and what we have not done. But they do work with the partnership and all other internationally recognized entities. And, you know, I'm not African Union guy. I'm basically U.S. government only. somebody else had questions there.
I was following up on Ron's comments and talking about looking at situations where the system is disempowering to the patient's population, women, but also I think the corollary to that is looking at how particularly the providers within the system are themselves disempowered to be able to provide care. And so, you know, the challenges, for example, in Malawi, the World Bank study on facility-based maternal deaths that's going on is showing
And just to another layer of comment which I want to add is I think all this initiative, we actually need three levels of functioning, and most of the time we have this middle level, the Ministry of Health, trying to achieve, whether the community level or the top level management is always forgotten. And if you were to succeed with PEPFAR, there is so much of high level involvement. You know, the U.S. ambassador is always, you know, call on the presidents and ask, you know, what are you doing? And they are able to iron out any kinks, you know, which might come up. And this is why I've been always advocating that Safe Mother should be a presidential level head of state initiative in these countries where they are called upon. And, you know, if implementing agencies finds roadblocks or hits roadblocks, then we should be able to call on the president. You know, he should be able to make that. But then thing is, how many initiatives can the president launch, you know, for everything, you know, from education to this and that? So we have to be also cognizant of the political realities and limitation. But I think that's where we have been acting on the mid-level, you know, ignoring the top and the bottom. I will just say two statements. You know, maternal mortality has persisted with and without the HIV epidemic. If you look at the northern African, except the Arab countries like Sierra Leone and Djibouti and all, where HIV prevalence is, you know, is it under 5% or about 1%, they still are top in the list. And also, it has deteriorated in the high HIV burden areas, which HIV has played a part in some countries where it is a burden, but not in all countries.
I'll just add to that, just from a more programmatic side, that I think that we recognize that there are numerous opportunities for lost opportunities for integration with HIV/AIDS that are critical, particularly, for example, PMTCT, and making these critical links that would ultimately help. I know that someone is doing their PhD right now looking at, in fact, Bangladesh and Malawi, and trying to look at, there has been a slight decline in mortality in Malawi also. I shouldn't say slight. There has been a decline in MMR in Malawi, but trying to look at the factors and trying to look at the influence and of the HIV/AIDS epidemic there on maternal mortality, potential linkages, etc. There are looking at doing a much deeper investigation of that. But certainly we, from a programmatic side, are really looking to synergize and have set up processes in place to engage those who are working in PEPFAR, those who are working on MCH to increase, you know, our capacity to.
And the last question.
I'm not sure I feel equipped to answer that, but we have very promising, in terms of evidence for being able to roll out misoprostol where there are no skilled attendants. There are some very good studies from Nepal. And we are trying to, I mean, I think that the work is much more on working on policy as well as being able to introduce this at a pilot stage in country and then scale up. But looking at the quality issues very closely in this process, it needs to be well documented. But there is evidence that where there's no skilled birth attendants, you can provide training in misoprostol and roll it out at the country level. It's going to vary by context, but certainly very good evidence from the Nepal setting. So isn't it? I think it's being scaled up in the Nepal context, is it not? Or not really? Okay. I'll let Dr. Shahul give you more of a global picture on this.
I was in a session the other day, but which was talking about cost effectiveness of MESO, which is more of a mathematical game than program review, which I don't know.
Right. And I think just like the slides that I showed for the community treatment in terms of doing operations research and looking to see what the choices are going to be for Africa within the African context, there is a need to build evidence and systematically look at what the feasibility is, what the quality of implementation is, and generate information that then can influence larger scale action or a more targeted action at the country level with misoprostol as necessary within the country context. I was looking at some recent information too that there is replication of that task shifting approach. Varies obviously by context in terms of what's needed. I know of other work from India, which is also very promising, particularly Tamil Nadu, and where they did some training of anesthetists within the system, or at least increased the anesthetists in the system. But there is an evidence gap here, and I think that there is a need to build evidence from other countries. I don't know to what extent it's being replicated in other settings, but Mozambique clearly stands out. But the bottom line on that, too, is for things such as home-based life, where there is no skilled care, home-based life-saving skills, it's a rethink on traditional TBA training, task-shifting models, which to a certain extent are happening in certain countries. There is a need to build a definitive evidence base around these so that they can be considered for more systematic action at the country level.
Kichi, do you have anything to add?
I know for the Mozambique example, it's also been done in Zambia. I think we've talked about it. So Zambia is another country where
Zambia is currently doing it.
Yes. So, you know, I can think about a couple other examples, but it depends on the country and if they have another. not evident to pilots in their country and then visit still.
Yeah, I used to teach in the Zambia program a couple of years ago, and they actually take care of the healthcare system where we don't have the physician manpower, especially in the outside Lusaka. The challenge there is, the high mortality rate among clinical offices, that we will, if the current setup continues, HIV mortality, we will never be able to replace the number of clinical officers. That's the same also in Malawi, who are passing away, at least for now. Okay, when I walked into this room, I thought it's only three of us going to talk to each other, and I was really glad. I was counting, we were about 30 people, that's an average for an APHS session, so I'm really happy and thankful to all of you, each of you, for making to here, and this is, I think, very interested folks, sitting through this discussion, so thank you very much, and we will continue this discussion in future sessions.
Yeah.
Progress within a broader country story, and I wasn't able to
your presentation was great, actually.
And it was an eye-opener for me because I just realized that there were very progressive, kind of groundbreaking elements. But then in the USAID's,
I was actually impressed because I have to say, like, sometimes.
I'm going to quote you.
I actually
sent an email yesterday back to Mary Ellen saying that I'm really proud of our portfolio and our work in Africa.
People obviously in there, that you've got some thinking people in there.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think that within the Global Health Bureau, we have a couple of spots, and I cut out all those slides so you could have a better sense, but there's a skilled attendance pathway, there's a PPH pathway. So each one of these pathways, the way we try to systematize our work in Global Health Bureau is research, introduction, expansion. There's one on newborn care too. So what's that for research? Where is it that we're introducing, and what is it that we're introducing, and then where is it that we're ready to scale up? And our success in the Global Health Bureau is really taking these left side interventions and facilitating the process of intervention. So that's a nice piece, but is another story. Lessons learned, the whole zinc piece, there's a lot more that needs to be done in the country than the
We're working on the
Extension workers now. They're all young women, 100% women, and they are doing very well.
Right.
But
not in surgical tests.
That reminded me, that just reminded me, Access, our flagship project, is actually doing work on misoprostol with these health extension workers.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's that example.
It's a hot topic right now.
Really?
experimental research that might have great health potential.
And also, I think that, you know, I didn't show data for this, but in our NGO grant, one of the, there is a specific, it's community-based impact-oriented methodology for some, but then it's a community, basically a care group model, which uses volunteers to collect vital event information.
Right.
And that community-based surveillance, I feel like, hasn't been exploited, but it needs to be exploited from the journal. But with the right linkages, right? So going beyond just the numbers, but even using those types of things with more stronger evaluative techniques as a part of prospective monitoring and evaluation to say, well, how good was it?
Yeah.
We did some work. It's in the State of the UNICEF, State of the World's Children, UNICEF.
Oh, here?
Yours.
Yes.
What did you want? Oh,
no.
Well, Poppy, you know. But I'm going to send you information.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
She is, she works for a bot, so I won't get her. But she basically, I work for USAID directly. She's working for our flagship project bot. And she's also involved in the White Ribbon Alliance, but at the Poppy, you'd probably be interested in their global survey for ANSCAL, which looks at sort of the practice from multiple countries. So it's looking at the composite indicator from ANSCAL and how good it is, and then also I think any sort of new updates on that.
And really dear to you, you can very
much. Yeah, I wanted to have time to get some food before the final presentation.
Absolutely. It was lovely to meet you and talk to you, and I'm sorry I didn't have the information to be able to. But I will certainly link you up with Lily Cox is a good, very good contact for you at USAID because she is the CTO president. Yeah, Lily Cox. She is our CTO for the I'm a DC job member, but I'm very good. Mary Stanton I've worked with. She's really our senior
journalist.
She's fabulous. Yeah, so I've worked a lot with her.
Perfect. salmon?
No, UBC behind this project, you know, the CDC project on breastfeeding.
Right, exactly, yes, yes, the PI, yeah, yes, that's right,
yeah. Well, yeah, you know, he described it, and he's being under, he's underutilized. And,
really, yeah.
Is it, you know, he's just sitting on that one project.
Yeah.
I mean, he was actually the Secretary of Health in Zambia.
Yes, that's right.
He was running off the lead, he was ahead of the
That's like, I think that...
You never even wrote me back when I wrote to you.
No, I was going to say that's like the key challenge, you know? Basically, transforming systems is a power struggle.
It's a power struggle.
It's a power struggle, and while we, and I wasn't able to like say that, while we all focus on context in our programming and we say we're working on system strengthening, we don't address this power issue enough. And in some cases, we perpetuate that power issue.
And the powers that be have learned to work with us that way.
Yes.
They've learned to work with us.
Yeah, they've learned to work.
Okay, you're here, you know, we'll tolerate you for the time you're here. When you leave, you know.
And I think, like, provider morale and the whole issue of caring behaviors versus abusive behaviors, I mean, that's
challenging. I wanted to see these two books. Are these available?
Yes, they are.
Oh, these are from the World Bank.
That's why I said go to the World Bank and say we have five successors. But we have five. You know what
I mean? These are purchased. Yeah. I can purchase them online.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
But Ron, I said to Mary Ellen as I was preparing this presentation, because it was an eye opener for me.
You need to write more, right?
Yeah.
You need to prepare stuff.
I said, as we move forward in these countries, in these 30 countries, it doesn't have to be. Case study methodology doesn't let us figure out a way to track progress and link it to inputs. To even be able to say USAID through its efforts contributed this. I could tell the Senegal story, but I had no story with results and contributions from USAID.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, and I said, Mary Ellen, it's like an eye opener. We can't do
that. Yeah, you cannot do that.
We can only talk about project-specific
success,
which is not right.
Which is not right, that's right.
I mean, we're going to look at, for these 30 countries, Global Health Council and other partners really mandated that use the list tool, and figure, because it has three costing modalities, you need to tell us that for this level of cost investment, this is what you're getting.
Yeah.
So, that at least starts the process at the planning stage for this increase in $2 million for MCH.
Yes.
This is what we're going to be able to do. But I think that, you know, even the stories from Asia, like Bangladesh and looking at India and the successful and less successful, it's not clear-cut.
No, it's not clear-cut.
It's not clear-cut at all what may be contributing to progress.
That's right. Yeah.
So you have to take all of the declines. I mean, Ethiopia?
Yeah.
26 or over 20% decline.
Right.
What? How?
What? Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you. It was so nice.
This
to
is
see
also
you.
A
yeah.
very nice book, by the way. Millions Saved. It's broader global public health success story. So that's what I was referring to, connecting with our
Success. Okay.
Very nice.
In fact,
I was thinking that with CSDS Plus, we should try to apply. For our CSHGP. Yes, MCHIP. That was another slide which I got.
Oh, they got it up.
Which was deleted. I had 60 slides.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mary Ellen and I sat.
But I think this was quite balanced.
Yeah. This is quite balanced. Yeah.
Too much would have been.
Yeah.
And you know, but I was really scared. I thought only three of us would be there. Only 30 showed up. And that's average between all the
sessions. So, you had your group, your whole group behind you.
Yeah.
I think I told Mary Ellen.
It was nice to see you. And it kept us engaged. I thought we'd be just talking to ourselves and leaving.
No, you did well. Yeah. I'm glad I saw it.
So at least we were speaking to those who were really interested in it. Wasn't
right.
It
was
Yeah.
Nice links for us to have too.
That's right.
She was. from, both of them were from UC Berkeley, but
oh,
the one lost
yeah, the yeah, one was from the
yeah,
I know
both
her,
of them.
Yeah.
So the one is actually doing a very interesting study in Ethiopia on audits or being able for lay workers to actually look at the, be able to provide the cause of death.
I see, yeah, yeah, that's good. That's
but
good.
Both of them said, I just directly quoted them, and said, we didn't know USAID was involved in such cutting edge, great work, and I was like,
yeah.
The thing is, you know,
everywhere I go,
yeah.
I take USAID fashion everywhere at any meeting.
Yeah.
But that's the drawback within our entire system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.